Ding.
Congratulations,
boy. 21st century, that's all you've got. Put a heat pack on it.
What the fuck do we do?
And I trust you because you're short, you're balding, chubby, desperate. You know, I mean, I feel like I can trust you. If I die, I'm going to become even more of a god than I probably already am now, so what does it matter?
Yeah, I just want there to be podcasts about me thousands of years from now. Fuck everything else that comes after me.
If you're going to rub one out over Carrie Young Princess Leia, it's good to have a photo built into the tissue box.
It can go in your limoncello.
Episode 53 of Augustus.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. Let's get into it. So last time, Marcus Primus, the proconsul of Macedonia, up on charges for having waged war outside of the borders of Macedonia. They say, who gave the order? He says, you want the truth? You can't handle the truth. They say, yeah, we can. I want to know. He says, Augustus via Marcellus. And they went, We weren't ready yeah. for that at all. Let's strike that from the record.
Retract, exactly. Strike that. Yeah. So now they've got the shit storm. Because here's the question. If Augustus is retired, semi-retired or whatever, and there's consuls and there's censors and all that good stuff, how can a teenager who's just entered the Senate give an order to a proconsul governor or whatever you want to call him? So how is that even possible? So really, is there anybody who's a magistrate independent? Do they own the office themselves? What in the hell is going on? This can't possibly be true if everything that Caesar has told us is for real.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did.
Now I got to go back and watch that movie again. Shit, I'll be up all night.
Oh my God, that is one of the greatest scenes of anything.
Now, we got to stop here for a second. How true is that, that there always will be people on a wall with a gun, keeping other people out so we can go along with our lives, as superficial as whatever as they are. I mean, that is the reality, not the ideal, obviously, but that is the reality on this planet.
Yes, it is. Until we mature as a civilization. I mean, but that's the great thing about the movie and the screenplay and Aaron Sorkin's writing and everything. It does, even if you're a hard sort of pacifist lefty like me, you watch that and you go, yeah, fuck, he's right. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stand on the wall. I'm not, you know?
And I will say thank you for you doing it. Yeah.
Even though you may detest the character that he plays, Jessup, and detest the military establishment and the industrial military complex. Well, I get that. There's some truth in that. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, we can't handle it.
Accept that.
Yeah. So, cheers, Aaron Sorkin. Great role. But Jack's performance in that scene, man. Oh
yeah.
Fuck me.
Mesmerized.
One of the great scenes of all time. Anywho, back to Augustus. Did you give the order? So, this is shocking, as you say. Marcellus is a kid, but the big issue here is that this isn't one of Augustus's provinces.
Right.
It's one of the Senate's provinces, so he has no jurisdiction over this. And even if he was still the consul when this happened, and again, the timeline's a bit all over the place here, so it may have been before the second settlement, might have been after the second settlement, but either way, it should be the Senate that gives the order to start war, particularly against an ally, but really any foreign nation. So
why didn't Primus go, fuck you, you can't tell me what to do, this is the Senate's province?
Yeah, well, good question. Maybe because he was friendly with Augustus, maybe because he just figured, hey, Augustus is the boss, he'll work it out.
Right.
Not my job to question the boss, man. Like, I'm a soldier. You give me an order, I go do it.
That's exactly right.
But it smacks of a monarchy or of the old triumvirate here with Augustus just giving orders to governors, bypassing the Senate. So this entire facade that he's been building up of some sort of a return to normalcy is thrown out the window here. So either Augustus is lying about there being a return to normalcy, or Primus is lying. It's either Primus is lying,
or there's a third option,
which is
that Marcellus did say something and it didn't come from Augustus. Maybe he on his own 19-year-old heady with power told him to do it.
Now, if I was Primus and Marcellus gave me the order, I'd be like, look, absolutely, Marcellus, can I just get that in writing? Here's a quill. here's a piece of parchment. Could you look, please don't take this the wrong way. It's not that I don't believe you. I believe you.
Oh, yeah.
But
just because you don't shave every day yet.
Let's just say, I don't know, you die in a plague next week. no one else is going to believe me. So,
yeah,
you're right. That could be the option. Now, Marcellus, of course, is dead and can't testify. Now,
so this has to happen after his death. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's after his death, but again, where all this fits into the timeline, we don't really know.
Unfortunately, we just don't know,
It's murky. It's very murky. Now, I want to talk about testifying and testicle holding for a second.
Okay. I'm holding mine.
Somebody, I can't remember who, might have been Nick Milne, might have been somebody like that. Somebody posted on our Facebook page recently this meme that's been going around that the root of the word testify is the testes or the testicles. Because the ancient Romans, men would hold each other's testicles while they were swearing oaths as some sort of symbolism to say, look, this is how much I trust you, or how much I swear by what I'm doing, that I'm going to put my balls in your hands. I trust you to cut my balls. I'm not being turned on by this at all. That erection, that's not.
That's the wind.
It's not because it's turning me on. I'm always like that. Stiffy McGee, they call me. That's my nickname because I'm just Boner Jones.
Boo. Yours doesn't do that. Mine's always like this.
Now, I know you tried to pull this one over on me in Vegas, Ray. That was you. You said, look, this isn't gay. I just want to know that you're telling me the truth about... Right.
It's a truth detector.
That you're straight. let me cup your balls. Anyway.
Turns out he's not. He's bi.
I just want to blow the... I shouldn't say blow when we're talking about cupping balls. It's not true. If you see this, it was surprisingly, shockingly, maybe something you saw on Facebook is not true. It's fake news, this kind of thing. The two words testify and testicles come from the same root. The root word testis, T-I-S, testis, which meant witness in Latin. You testify, you're acting as a witness. The testes are a witness to a man's virility.
Ah, his balls have dropped. Gotcha. He's now a man.
Exactly. So there is no truth to that. There's no evidence that men used to cup each other's balls when they were swearing oaths in Rome.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. I think we should bring that back, or we should bring it in.
Start it right now.
When somebody goes to court and they have to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, hand on the Bible.
So help my balls.
Unzip your pants, flop your nutsack out, and say, hey, grab a hold of these, sir. I think they should have it when presidents are sworn in at President Trump's inauguration.
Yeah.
I think he should have flopped it out and had the judge just get a little bit of a fondle there while Trump was saying his oath.
But we'd have to change the inauguration to summer, not January. Nobody would go for that. No male would go for that.
Yeah, there is that. And I think the outgoing president should be the one cupping the balls of the incoming president. I wanted to see Trump drop his balls into Obama's hand.
Never.
Yeah.
Sad.
Anywho, there is, however, this section in the book of Genesis, which I shall read. And Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house, that ruled over all that he had, Put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred and take a wife unto my son Isaac. So, not exactly the same. He's saying, put your hand under my thigh.
Right.
You grab my balls while you swear to go and get a son from my own country, a daughter. A woman from my own country for my son.
Still pretty intimate.
Yeah, something slightly...
Some to it.
Faggy going on there. Now, it's
alt,
not...
Alt hetero.
I say that only because I watched... It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia last night. They had a whole episode based on one of them being called a faggot and whether or not it was hate speech. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. If you don't watch it, just check out, I think it's episode 6 of the current season of Always Sunny. It's basically, I think, their take on George Carlin's 7 words you can't say on television, because they say them all. And it's, it's brilliant and funny. Anywho, Augustus wasn't summoned to this trial because no one is going to go.
Hell no.
All right, bring in Augustus. Put him up on the stand like they did Colonel Jessup. You think it was scary getting Colonel Jessup up on the stand? Imagine getting Augustus up on the stand.
His father's a god. Yeah.
But he turns up anyway. Now, not calling him, I think, there's a number of reasons why you may not want to call him. One is because, you know, it's Augustus. You don't want to even cast aspersions on Augustus at this stage. But secondly...
You can't, yeah.
Well, secondly, it's a way to muddy the waters of the trial. I mean, he says, well... Augustus directly or indirectly gave me the order, and they go, well, we can't obviously call Augustus here, so we can't really determine whether or not that's true or false, so I guess we have to just give him the assumption of innocence and let him go, because Primus was well-liked. He was an important man, obviously, proconsul of Macedonia, and it's got troops in it. He's got to be a fairly well-respected and liked guy. Nobody wanted to drag him through the mud here. They wanted to get him off. And so the easiest way to do that is not even call Augustus to come and confirm or deny. But he turns up anyway.
Yeah, and you've got to be thinking at this point, yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. You mentioned his name. It should shut everything down. And as we all know, because we've done this ad nauseum, Roman trials had very little to do with the truth before Augustus comes along. You've got bribes. You've got innocent people going being made guilty, guilty people going free. You've got threats. You've got emotional, rousing speeches that sway people long enough to vote a certain way. You maybe vote a certain way thinking about if the person gets off, then maybe you can have a business relationship with them in the future and you can remind them that you voted for their innocence. Or maybe you can condemn someone you think is innocent, but maybe they're competitors. Something. So the truth has very little to do with this. But so this is nothing more than just two sides going at each other. It's obviously post-truth, even in Rome back then. But then, as you say, Augustus walks in and they can't ignore him. They have to do something at that point. So he does agree to give testimony.
Yeah.
Now, and how can you say, that's okay, Augustus, we don't need it. We're good. Thank you. Sit down.
Yeah. It's pretty shocking. But he gets up and he allows himself to be questioned by Murena, the defense attorney for Primus. Now, you put yourself in the shoes of Murena here for a second. Like,
shit. No, thank you.
Now, depending on which of the Murenas it is, he could be Augustus's co-consul at that time. And if not, he's at least a friend or friendly to or part of the inner circle, married to his sister is the wife of Messina, so part of the inner circle. And now you're questioning. I mean, you know that the charge here is serious. If Augustus did, in fact, directly or indirectly give the order, this is a big fucking deal. And Primus is your friend. You like Primus. You want to get him off. It's your job to get him off. Not in a sexual way, although that may be something that they do afterwards to celebrate. We're not here to judge.
No.
Two men do in the privacy of their own camper van of the park. Or two women.
Two lesbians or two people from the island of Lesbos. It's not anyone's business but theirs.
None of our business whatsoever. Nope. And so anyhow, so... He says, Mr. Augustus, did you, sir, give the order?
And I remind you that you're under oath, so help you your father.
Yeah, so help you your father. And do you mind if I fondle your balls while you give that oath?
To know that you're telling the truth.
Yeah. Augustus says, there's no truth to that Facebook meme. He goes, I know, but we're here, you know. My hands aren't doing anything else.
You know,
you're cute. What can I do? I like cupping people's balls. So it's just something. Some people use like a stress ball when they're thinking, when they're working, you know.
I literally use the balls of other people.
Yeah, it just helps me relax. I mean, do you mind? Do you care?
I care. I don't mind.
Augustus's presence on the witness stand has got to make him defensive, a little bit desperate. Yeah. Shit is getting real here.
real quick.
This isn't going to end well, no matter what happens here.
It can't.
Yeah. So, and as we said before, this guy, Murena, apparently was known for being pretty unflinching, always spoke his mind, pretty aggressive and abusive. If he got angry and annoyed, which he now does.
Right.
Now, it may be he's getting aggressive and abusive because he believes Primus. He believes that Primus was given the order. He knows Primus well. He knows Primus wouldn't go and do this just off his own bat. He knows that Primus expects to be believed. He didn't think they were going to get to this because no one thought Augustus would turn up. They certainly were going to call him in. He's turned up. He's thrown a spanner into the proceedings.
And now they have to shake him. They have to shake. They have to rattle Augustus to get the kind of answers they need.
And if they don't, a good man, Primus, is going to be found guilty. A good, honest man with an unblemished track record. So he starts to become a little bit aggressive with Augustus. Yeah. And Augustus, cool and calm as a cucumber, man. Not flustered at all.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. I'm not flustered. Do I look flustered? I'm not flustered. Look at my face. Look at my face. I'm not flustered. I'm fine. Murena asks Augustus why he is there, and Augustus replies, the common good.
Yeah. Why are you here? Who summoned you? What business do you have in here? We're trying to do a trial here. I'm here, the common good, to help people, to make sure the right thing is done. All I care about is Rome and the people.
The Republic needs me here.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. I bleed Republic.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So I imagine after this, after questioning Augustus, it was pretty much near the end of the trial, because what the hell is going to come after that?
Yeah. So we don't know any more details. It's not recorded, but all we do know is that Primus is found guilty.
Yeah.
What the other thing that we know is that some of the judges or the jurors voted for his acquittal. Now, this is a big deal. Maybe they were annoyed by Augustus's interference in the proceedings, and they was like, fuck you, we're going to vote to acquit him. Or maybe they didn't believe Augustus's testimony.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Either way, not good for Augustus.
Well, one of the people that are directly descended from Augustus is Bill Clinton. And when someone like that says, it depends on what your definition of is, is. I mean, Augustus could have technically told the truth. He could have told the truth in spirit. He could have out and out lied. We have no idea. And Marcellus is dead. So what in the hell do they have to go on? Just his testimony.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the fact that some members of the elite saying publicly here, we don't believe Augustus is telling the truth. Not a good sign about how his power is going here. So, anywho, particularly if this did happen when he was a consul, it's not good. Anyway, Primus is found guilty. And Marina is absolutely furious, which is going to have some consequences. But let's get back to the question about whether or not Augustus gave the order. You have to wonder why. Like, what would he have to gain from giving the order at this juncture?
I mean, there already are allies. I can do whatever I want at any time. They know that. And really, if I'm going to have a tribe attacked, is this the sloppy ass way I'm going to do it? I'm going to tell a 19-year-old to tell the governor, as opposed to just going through the Senate? Or, I mean, he could have easily have sent a warning to that tribe if they had been doing anything wrong, and you think they would have straightened up quick smart. And also during the trial, there was something about, yes, I did attack them, but they were planning something, so I had to punish them. I had to put them down. That was some part in the trial. So again, if Augustus needed them punished or put in their place or whatever, there's like 20 different better ways he could have done this. And like you said earlier, Primus not only waged war against them, but he took a lot of things and he made himself rich. I can't imagine Augustus saying, go there, attack an ally and take all the shit to make you rich. I mean, it just doesn't fit the mold in so many ways.
And it wasn't one of his provinces, so even if this is post the Second Settlement and he needed the Senate to attack them, if they believed that they were getting uppity, he just had to say, look, I think you should go and attack these guys. It's hardly like the Senate's going to deny that or go, no, I mean, it's highly likely he's going to get his own way. It just doesn't make sense. Now, so do you think Marcellus gave the order? Why would Marcellus give such an order to attack a foreign tribe that he's probably had nothing to do with? And why would he think he had the ability, the power to give an order to a proconsul to go and attack an ally of Rome? It seems highly unusual. Right. I know that he's supposedly got a reputation for being a little bit erratic.
That's stupid.
With poor judgment, according to Plutarch. But really, I mean, I can't imagine that he would overstep bounds like that. And again, you'd have to wonder, if you're Primus and you get an order to attack a Roman ally from a 19-year-old kid, it doesn't matter who he is, you're going to go, absolutely, Marcellus.
As soon as I
just need to make
uncle.
A phone call. Yeah, I just need to make a phone call to Rome. No, I'm not questioning. No. It's not about you at all. No, some dry cleaning. I forgot when I left Rome. I just need to get them to send it to me. Just sit right there. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Be right back. But here's the thing, because we've said from the very, very first show of this series for centuries, or for at least for decades, it has been the established practice to go as far as you can up the cursus honorum, become the governor of a province, rape the shit out of it, take everything you possibly can, because that's how you make your money. Because one, you go up the ladder so you can become a consul to get to become a governor, to get the money, knowing that you're probably going to be charged by somebody when you get back, and you're going to need that money to bribe the jurors or whatever. But it's just a part of who the Romans were. It was basically accepted practice to become a consul, to become a governor. Make, and that's where you make your money, especially if your family's lost money, if you're still trying to be an up-and-coming family, a noble family. But this is as normal for them as breathing. And so you've just got to think that Primus is like, you know, he might get a little mad at me, but I can get away with it. And maybe I just really need the cash. Maybe there was something in his life he needed the money. But this is a very normal course for a Roman nobleman. But he fucked up and he miscalculated very badly.
Did you say a robel? You thinking about Jessica again?
Yeah.
Just stop thinking about Jessica when we're
recording. I can't stop. She sends me... Anyways, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, there's all of that. Maybe he was doing it, but, you know, you'd have to think. I mean, I would have come up with a better, like, get-out-of-jail-free card than Augustus told me.
Yeah.
But maybe because Marcellus is dead, he thinks he can get away with that anyway. Whatever it is, he's found guilty. And the, you know, as I said, some of the people voted to acquit him, which is a bad scene. Maybe Augustus believed that Marcellus did it, and he's just trying to defend his memory, mm-hmm. because it looks bad if it looks like Marcellus was running around giving orders. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to make sense out of any of this. But as I said, Murena was furious. Now, possibly because Augustus intervened in the court case that he would have won otherwise, possibly because he believed that Primus was innocent, mm-hmm. and now a good man has been found guilty, his life is going to be destroyed.
Career, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't really know what happened to Primus after that, but a few months later, Murena himself is accused of being a member of a conspiracy to murder Augustus.
No. Yeah, there's this...
Yes.
What?
I said yes.
No, yes. There's this one guy called, is it Castrixius, who gets word to Augustus that there is a plot, there is a group of men, there is a conspiracy to kill you. You need to do something about it. And I've just got to really, really think that Team Caesar... they're already on to this. I mean, he's got the Praetorian Guard. He's got other bodyguards. He's got spies throughout the city. He's got his finger on the pulse of the city. He seems to know what's going on, or somebody that works for him knows what's going on. But he does find out about this conspiracy somehow, and so he's got to get to the bottom of it. Unfortunately, there are so many names of however many people there were that we just don't know. We know a few of them, but we don't know how far they had gone. We don't know how many are involved, but this is something that clearly Augustus has got to deal with. On one hand, he's trying to keep the commoners happy, even though he has to rip his clothes off occasionally saying, get out of my face. And now he's pissed off the elites. And so some of them are thinking about pulling an Ides of March. He has to deal with this.
Yeah. The leader of the conspiracy is a guy called Fannius Capio.
Sorry, I couldn't follow anybody by the name Fannius, but that's a personal thing.
Follow the Fanny was the rally cry that the conspiracy groups had. I'm following the Fanny.
Fanny.
He was
Bo
apparently. I love that song. I'd love to figure out how to sing that. I've tried to figure it out a few times. Too hard.
I can't. My kids do it all the time, but I still can't.
Do they? Oh, that's impressive. I'll have to get them to teach me when they come over.
All right.
He was supposedly a man of dubious reputation, Fannius Capio, Big Fanny. Apparently a bit of a Republican.
Bastard.
So not on the side of the Caesars here. But we sort of the history suggests that the majority of the conspirators, well, we don't know their names or what they were trying to achieve, were senators or from senatorial families. So it's another revolt of the elite.
Mm-mm.
If it in fact is true and not just made up.
Right.
But as you say, it's going to be hard to assassinate Augustus at this point. He, unlike Julie, he's got his bodyguard. He's got a Praetorian bodyguard around him. He's got networks of spies and informers. He's already been made sacrosanct.
Yes. The knives would just bounce
Julie,
off. Right.
Julius was already was also sacrosanct when he was assassinated. So obviously that, you know, sacrosanct, it's one of those. It's a, it's more of a guideline than a rule.
It's a nice word, but it doesn't help when the blades start coming at you. But here's my thing. Yeah. I mean, again, and we don't know, but do these guys, do they want to restore democracy? Do they just want to freaking take over? Do they want to kill him just for the sake of him being in the way? Do they want to put one of their own in charge? I mean, we really don't know what their true intentions were or what their long-term game was, but it doesn't really matter because for right now, they want to kill the head of the state. He can't have that. And we all know, and I think we all believe that Rome would pretty much fall apart if that happened, but he has got layer upon layer upon layer of defense that is going to serve him well.
And just back to the sacrosanctity thing, I was just thinking that it's interesting that they had to pass a law that somebody's life was sacrosanct.
Hmm.
Like, these days, we don't worry about that. I just kind of assume that your life is sacrosanct.
Yeah.
That you can't be touched. Everyone has that right now. We don't need to say, well, these guys have it and these guys don't have it. And it sort of
was
interesting.
Well, was there a time when if I made an oath, if I pledged or if I don't know what they call it, but if I swore an oath that I now consider you to be sacrosanct, is that going to make me any less likely to kill you? Do their oaths mean more than people's oaths today? I mean, I would really love to know the answer. I mean, how much did it really help Caesar? Not much.
Yeah, obviously. Anywho, so the charges are brought against these conspirators, and apparently they all get the fuck out of Dodge before their trials. Now, this is seen as an admission of guilt, obviously, running away, but maybe you're just like, well, shit, this is trumped up. They're out to get me. I'm not going to get a fair trial. Augustus will just rock up and go. They knew what had happened to Primus. Augustus will just rock up and go, yeah, they're all guilty and everyone's going to agree with him. Maybe they didn't think they could get a fair trial at this stage. Right. What do you think?
Well, I just want to throw out, as a college-educated white male, I miss the Roman Republic. If you were affluent, if you were noble, if you were brought up on charges and you were found guilty, then either right before the sentence came down or maybe even right after, there was a period, a grace period, where you could pretty much pick up everything you possibly carry, leave town, nobody would try and stop you because you're one of the boys, go set up a new home in an allied town, live life pretty comfortably. You're obviously, your career is over, and maybe you can't come back, maybe you can one day when there's a new power in town, but it was accepted, yes, one of us, one of the 1% got caught, let him go, let him take as much as he can, and go live life, and maybe you'll come back and try again. But the days of the absolute abuse of power that these people had, it was one of the reasons why where Rome is at this particular moment. But that's not the way it's going to happen anymore. Those are done with. Augustus has been threatened. He has to take care of this. And how many times has someone been kicked out and only come back later, maybe leading an army or a part of an army, and get revenge? Augustus cannot let this go anywhere. He can't allow these people to live. Something has to be done because they might come back one day, and he doesn't need that. Something's got to happen.
Something's
got to give, baby, and it's not him.
Before we get to that, I wanted to point out that Tiberius... Mm-hmm. Is one of the guys who's assigned to prosecute these guys in absentia because they've fucked off. It's his first public outing. You know, being a prosecutor, as we know, is one of the first steps on the cursus honorum. Julius Caesar was a prosecutor. Cicero was a prosecutor. It's a good way to make a name for yourself, mm-hmm. to develop patrons by defending somebody successfully. They're in your debt. They'll give you money. Cicero made all of his money by defending people. But in this case, like in the Primus case, Tiberius couldn't get a unanimous conviction.
Mm.
So again, there are certain judges, jurors, who don't really believe the story that they're supposed to believe. They're not buying the narrative. And this is sort of an indication that not all of the elite in Rome are on board with Augustus or Augustus's camp. Or the story that Augustus is telling.
What if they do believe it, but they don't care? They're sick and tired of Augustus, and they want to do anything they can to help the enemies of Augustus. I mean,
yeah,
he's in the way. Too, yeah. He is in the fucking way of them ruling this most powerful city in the Western world. So he's got to go.
I'm just surprised that at this point in time, people feel like they can get away with standing up to Augustus.
What the fuck?
They are voting in secret, so they can. It's easier to do it in a trial because their votes up until this point were secret. In fact, Augustus was so annoyed by this that he gets a law passed that in future trials where the defendant wasn't present, the vote of each juror would be published.
Damn.
So he would know how you were voting.
Effective.
Supposedly, it was going to make it easier to get convictions in cases that he had an interest in. But as you say, Roman tradition allowed aristocrats to go into self-exile after their conviction. They would take their cash and go into a comfortable retirement in an allied and a friendly city, lose their rights as citizens. But they got to live. I remember Cicero had to do that after he had a spat with Pluker after the Catiline conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys don't get such privileges. Soldiers are sent after them. They are caught and executed.
I imagine they didn't get to make a last statement. Nobody wants to hear it.
No.
Found, caught, killed. The end of it. I mean, pretty effective. I thought it was interesting, and I love this point because there's so much to admire and yet hate about Rome. One of the fathers of the accused found out that one of his slaves tried to help his son, and so he praised that slave because even though his son was a outlaw of the state or whatever, the slave chose to be loyal to the son over versus the state. And so he praises him. Another slave betrays him, and he has that one publicly killed. So again, you can be whatever on the side of whatever issue you want, but for these guys, you have to remember it's a group of families competing against each other, and it was absolute loyal to that family, whether you were a slave or whatever. It was us against them, and even in this situation, that has not changed. This father is expecting even the slaves to ignore the rules, to ignore the laws, and to be loyal to the family. I just find that really fascinating.
Well, I think you're missing the point of that,
though. Uh-huh.
For a start, the slave who tried to protect the son wasn't just praised, he was freed.
Okay.
Given his freedom, the one who betrayed the son and gave him away was publicly crucified, led through the streets with a thing around his neck and then was publicly crucified. But so I think the takeaway with this is the father is crucifying the slave that gave his son, who was found guilty of a conspiracy against Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, the father's basically saying here that he believes his son. I mean, if you believe that your son was really guilty, then the slave did the right thing by telling the soldiers where to find him. He should have been rewarded, but he's not. He's crucified. So this is basically the Capio's father going up against Augustus.
Right.
So I think the important thing here is that he is basically going up against Augustus. He's putting himself at odds with Augustus right. here, which again is an indication that not everybody is even pretending to like Augustus.
Mm.
Augustus apparently lets it slide, though. Dio writes, the emperor was not vexed. He's like, yeah, I don't care. You can say that. Crucify 100 slaves. I don't care. What's no skin off my.
He should not care because again, someone, you know, the father can't touch him. The father can't threaten him. Obviously, he's lost enough as it is, and so I think it's semi noble of Augustus to not. I mean, because if it was Donald Trump, let's be honest, if it was Donald Trump, he would have had probably the entire family killed, or he would have went after the father or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be a ruler and be extremely sensitive to every tiny slight, because pretty soon you'll be wiping everybody out. So I think Augustus says the right thing and says, I acknowledge and I totally understand why you did what you did, and I'm going to let it alone because I did what I needed to do to remove a threat direct, you know, from me.
Yeah, man, Augustus's successes will have people killed for sneezing in their presence, yeah. But that's not Augustus. Now, Murena was warned by his sister, Maecenas's wife, or there's a rumor that she had been having a long affair with Augustus, and it might have been him that told her who then warned Murena, but... either way, we don't really know and didn't save him anyway. Right. There are also rumors that Maecenas and Augustus's relationship was strained as a result of this affair. But again, no evidence. Might have just been gossip later on.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe, yeah.
After the execution, Augustus permits sacrifices to be voted and offered as, thanks for his victory against the conspirators. Mm. Now, this upset the elite again because, as we know, not the done thing to celebrate domestic squabbles,
right.
Fighting amongst Roman citizens, even though he did do it after he defeated Antony. It's always been something that's been avoided usually in the past. But he goes, yeah, sure. You know, sure.
Victory!
That's his sacrifices,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
He didn't have a triumph, but he had sacrifices. Yeah. And this is not the done thing.
Well, and here's the thing. If you have to put a pin in this moment in time, as far as the commoners are concerned, Augustus can do no wrong except for not become dictator. And he just seems to be pissing off again and again and again the elites. So it's good that he has these bodyguards. It's good that he's got the Praetorian Guard. And it's good that he's got this network of spies and informers because he's pissing off people who have access to arms and money. You know, a very dangerous combination.
Well, the people want him to be dictator.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not
no,
that that's
yeah.
the one thing he can't do. They're begging him to do
right.
it.
Right. I'm just saying right now they absolutely love him. And that's certainly not the case with the elites. And it just seems to be getting worse as this trial and everything that comes after it unfolds.
And not even the people that are close to him are safe. Salvidinius, we mentioned early on, one of his original gang was the first friend to be executed. Then Cornelius Gallus, the first prefect of Egypt, wasn't executed but was driven to suicide when Augustus sort of shunned him.
Right.
And now we've got Murena, who was also supposedly close to Augustus and maybe his co-consul.
Damn.
Is executed. Ronald Syme in his book writes, the tall trees fall in the tempest and the thunderbolt strikes the highest peaks.
Yeah, this is
like
not
that.
Going well.
Even the guys that are close to Augustus and powerful are at risk, perhaps more at risk than anyone else, which is interesting if, in fact, these are set up, this trial was not true. There was no conspiracy. Was there a conspiracy? Was there not? We don't know. Maybe Murena just was running around mouthing off about the Primus trial and Augustus decided to construct a conspiracy to have him killed.
Yeah.
We don't know.
But here's the thing. I mean, the elites might be getting pissed off at Augustus, but through this lack of a trial. Well, they pretty much charged him, but because they were pretty much found, hunted down, and killed, I mean, it's his way of saying, you know, when I was younger, I did proscribe a lot of people. I had a lot of people killed. I took away a lot of property, and I did some horrible things. I might be older now, and I'm maybe a little wider, but I can bring back that part of me if it's needed. I still have what it takes to wipe out my enemies. So just remember that as you see me walking down the street trying to be the statesman that everybody wants me today. Don't forget that there is that part of me that still exists. And I think that was a message that some of them hopefully got.
Woo! I use my walk, I can still have you killed if you piss me off.
I'm not gonna look the other way. Kick your ass. I'm staying alive.
Yeah, he's staying alive, Augustus.
Yep.
Now, Ronald Syme, in his classic book on the fall of the Roman Republic, he says that it was the consul Murena, Varro Murena, who was part of the conspiracy, who defended Primus and who now is executed, mm-hmm. which is why he is no longer consul and is replaced by Piso.
Right.
Adrian Goldsworthy, in his book on Augustus, says it was Licinius Murena, that the consul Murena had died earlier, 24-23, mm-hmm. and that this happens in 22. So I don't know which one to believe. As I said, it's all over the place. But if you take Syme's timeline, it kind of makes sense. So imagine that the Primus affair had happened. Murena, co-consul, had defended Primus. Augustus had to step in and squelch that, and there was some disquiet, discontent amongst the elite about that whole affair.
Right.
Then there's a conspiracy against Augustus being led by one of the consuls.
Damn.
And members of the Senate and senatorial families. He puts that down, and he has Murena executed. Then he appoints Piso. Now, as we said in an earlier episode, Piso was part of the anti-Caesarian faction going way back 20 years ago, had been quiet. You know, for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. he's a Republican, known to be a Republican, known not to be a friend of Caesar. Up until now, up until him, all of the consuls had been part of Caesar's sort of club, the Club Caesar.
Right.
Where they invented the Caesar salad, right. By the way. It was what they ate at Club Caesar. But Piso wasn't. He was from absolutely the other camp, and he gets appointed made consul by Augustus. Now, if you take the Syme timeline, that makes a lot of sense. He's like, oh, shit, okay, the natives are restless. I better appoint somebody who is well known to not like me very mm-hmm. much and not be a fan of, you know, my way of doing things as a consul to take the heat off him. And then he gets sick, and then he has the second settlement. And maybe that makes a lot more sense because there's a lot of angst, a lot of anger, conspiracies going on to have him removed, and that is why he steps away, second settlement. Look, okay, I'm not going to be the consul anymore. Right. You guys can have the keys to the car back. I'm going to go out to the provinces and just, you know, yeah. fuck around out there, keep myself busy. Because he's trying to take the heat off him,
right?
And also, it's a way of again, maybe now that Marcellus is dead, ensuring peace and stability in the event of his mortality through natural causes or unnatural causes. The elite are going to be interested in having some sort of a path of succession. What happens when he dies? If they're half smart, they know if he gets assassinated, there's going to be blood in the streets again anyway, after like there was after Julius Caesar died. So by him sort of stepping down after all of this, it takes the heat off. They see he's opening up vacancies for them to have a career path again. Plus, he's sort of keeping the power in some form, so he feels he's safe. And also, if he dies, though, now they know that there is some sort of succession, at least because the old, you know, co-consul thing has been restored properly. There's going to be elections again. I don't know. I think that timeline, I think the same timeline, the same timeline makes more sense than the Goldsworthy timeline. The jigsaw puzzle seems to fit better for me anyway. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could go along with that. Yeah, the Goldsworthy was pretty much trying to argue that that wasn't the timeline, that this came after that. But that does fit a lot of things and makes a lot more sense. And again, you've got to think after the trial, after the executions, and the people, whether they believe everything or whatever, that someone, there were a group of men were trying to kill Augustus, they've got to be thinking now more than ever, oh my God, if this does ever happen, what are the consequences, or basically what is going to happen to us if someone is able to get close enough to this guy to put a knife in his ribs? So the commoners are very unhappy, or they're very nervous at this point, because they're just thinking about what's going to happen after he is gone. And now that Marcellus is gone, I mean, they've got to be getting even more jittery. What's going to happen in the immediate future, and what is going to happen in the long term? So the commoners, they're pretty much shaken up by this. Who knows how the elites are? The elites happy? Or they're like, oh, we almost got him, or now we're even more mad at him because he killed a lot of good people. So you've got the rich going one way, you've got the poor going other, and you've got Augustus right in the middle, trying to keep it all together, trying to keep everybody happy. I think it's time to get the hell out of town, for personally. I mean, because we all know that Agrippa is going to the east. What in the hell is he going to do now?
Yeah, the people, I mean, we know that after Julius Caesar's assassination, the people weren't on the side of the liberators. Mm-hmm. And now there's even less support for the conspiracy. As we've explained in the last few episodes, Augustus has done a lot for the people. Oh, yeah. Solving the grain shortage, creating jobs, cleaning up the poo.
Water. Baths.
Yeah, water, all this. Yeah, and peace and stability. Absolutely. Most importantly, priceless. After decades or a century of blood in the streets. So the people like it. He's a benign dictator. He's a good dictator from their perspective. He's making life better in lots of real ways. Cash in the hand, man. Like cash in the hand ways through to the bigger, grander things, building projects, etc.
Right.
Whether or not there really was a conspiracy against him, we'll never know. 100 years later, the Emperor Domitian complained that the only way to prove a conspiracy was to be murdered.
That will do it.
So, yeah, but I don't know. It's probably highly unlikely that the conspiracy was invented. Maybe it was just a way of getting rid of some unruly senators.
That's a stretch. I think there was a conspiracy Machiavellian in some form. It probably wasn't very well organized. It sounds like it was being led by an idiot, but I think there was talk, and that's enough to get you killed.
And the fact that they were hunted down and killed, we have to remember that Cicero didn't let the Catilinian conspirators live on in exile either. Yeah. Good old Cicero in 63, the year of Augustus's birth, had conspirators executed. Mm-hmm. So this isn't new. And as you said, the risk is if you don't execute them, they go into exile and then they come back. We've seen that happen time and time again during the civil wars. And maybe Augustus also wants to send a message about how conspiracies will be treated. There will be no exile. Don't think you can do this and then go and live comfortably in retirement in Gaul or somewhere, you know. You conspire against my life, you fucking get the pointy end of a stick.
I'm going to take yours.
Pointy end of a gladius. But, you know, I also think this is really interesting, as you mentioned before, that it's a reminder that this is the same Augustus who ordered prescriptions and executions in the past. He only stopped because he chose to. Mm-hmm. And he can go back to having people killed any time if he wants to. He doesn't want to do it.
I don't like to do it, but I can.
No, but I can. If I have to have people executed in order to maintain peace and stability, then I will. Yes, I know I'm telling everybody that we're going back to tradition and legality and elements of the Republic, but there's a limit to my patience here. There's a limit to how much I'm going to keep up that
facade. Well,
killing
your enemies, that's going back to tradition.
I will not allow what I have built to be threatened. And yes, I can bring armies into Rome, but I don't want to do that, and I don't need to do that because I've got the people on my side.
Don't make me be a dick. You wouldn't like me when I'm a dick. Now, here for me, the amazing thing is that pretty much all of this, even though we've stretched it out over a couple of episodes, all of this has pretty much happened less than 2 years from when he got back from Spain. And so we're going to find out that he's going to spend a lot of time away from Rome. He was in Spain, you know, obviously trying to take care of the Spaniards. He's back. He's had the second settlement. He's had this trial. He had to put down this conspiracy, whether it was real or whatever or not. And he's had the grain famine. So he has settled Rome down to a degree. It's time to hit the road and take the Augustus show on tour.
And that is what we will cover in the next episode. And I have I have his music here for when he leaves Rome.
Nice.
Saddest TV music ever. All right. We're out.
All right. Bye.